Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Well, grand rising to all of you joining us today on the Female Solution Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, and our host today, Jana, joining us live from London with a fantastic guest, and we've got some more of our sisters of the microphone who would like to welcome our wonderful guest, Mercy Makinde.
Yes, you got that right.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us. And
it's a pleasure.
We are so excited to have this conversation because it is a global issue, and you have dealt with escaping from domestic violence.
Come on.
And so, Jana, we can hear you now, of course. If you'd like to put up an image, Jana, we certainly would love seeing your wonderful face or even a symbol of your face as we join the rest of our global audience in exposing and talking about that underlying thing that affects so many families and that is domestic violence. So, Jana, we're going to give you an opportunity to take it away and introduce our guest, and then we're going to hear more about the amazing Amazon Woman, the organization founded by our guest today. Jana, go right ahead. Jana, are you, check your mute? I think Jana may be having some technical difficulties. Well, we're going to also bring in our Monday host to participate in this discussion because it's one that touches all of our hearts, and we certainly don't want to minimize the condition for anybody who may be going through this and may be too ashamed to talk about it. And often that is the case. So now our guest today is a woman of many talents, one of which is great resilience when it comes to surviving something that so many are trapped in and don't know how to survive. So in your own words, Sister Mercy, tell us your story. What happened? I understand at the age of 17, you were married to a man who was older than your father.
Absolutely.
Tell us about that. How did that happen? First of all, your roots, are you from Nigeria?
Yes.
Now, I was
in my first year in university, and my dad asked me to come home.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Yes, Jana, we can hear you now. And so Mercy's now
Grand Rising, is this morning where you are?
Yes, morning.
Hi,
here.
Everyone.
It's morning here in the States. I know it's afternoon. Yes, so it's afternoon here in the States, but it's evening there in London. So, but of course, the sun rises wherever you are. So we
exactly
Grand Rising. So now, Mercy was just telling us how this came to be that she was married at 17 to a man older than her husband. So continue, my sister, and I'm going to bring in another sister. Zelda. Thank you for joining us today. We're listening to the story, and I'm sure you'll find it fascinating. A young woman in the midst of beginning her career suddenly. So tell us, Mercy, what happened?
Okay. Can you all hear me clearly? Can you all hear me?
Yes, we hear you. Yeah, we hear you wonderfully. Yes.
Okay. All right. So it was my first year in uni, and I think I fully about the semester. So I got this call from my dad that I needed to come home. And remember, those days, they weren't cell phones, you know, so I had to go to, like, a business center to call, and then he had left a message, you know, through the people I...
Can I just say hi?
Oh, absolutely. Hi. Yes, we hear you fine. Now, Jana, you have a little bit of feedback. You may need to mute for a moment because we're getting a bit of feedback from your mic. And then just unmute when you get ready to speak, okay?
Okay, cool. I just want to say,
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt you.
All right. I think she's having a little bit of technical issues.
Yeah, because I can barely hear her.
Yes. But just hold on, Jana.
You're at uni?
Yes, but if we have any problems, you know, I can always connect you through my end. So just hold on. So we're going to hear Mercy's story, and then we'll come back and see how your sound is. If we need to do another connection, that's no problem. But go ahead, Mercy. So you were telling us you were just called from your father. You were at the university.
I was asked to come home, and then I came home.
Sure.
The day I arrived, this elderly man came to the house. He came with food, I've never seen him in my life, but it looked like everyone in my family knew him. So my siblings were like, welcome, 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 welcome. And my dad, you know, like a huge celebration, like a welcome home for your queen. I'm wondering what's going on. Anyway, we had dinner, and then the guys tried to, you know, cozy up,
yes.
You know, trying to come up to me, trying to be really friendly. And those are things that my dad would never allow, you know, even with a younger pair. And everybody just turned a blind eye and like, you know, go ahead, you know, have time, spend time with him. But, you know, then I was young. I mean, the 17-year-old back in 1993 is not the same as the 1995, rather. It's not the same as the 17-year-old now. I mean, girls 17 now, I see them and I'm wondering, how come they are so smart? I wish I was this smart when I was 17. Anyway, I was so naive and I didn't know what was going on. I couldn't figure out what was happening. And after the man left, my dad told me I was this girl.
Okay, so what I can do, I can phone up while talking to him.
Yeah, just calling on the
I'm gonna mute for a minute.
Yes. Okay.
So my dad tells me I'm going to get married to him in 2 weeks, and I just sat down there looking at him. I'm like, okay, if you say so.
Really?
I didn't argue.
Okay, we seem to be frozen now.
I didn't put up a protest.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm frozen now.
Wow.
Yes. So
can I go on?
Yes, you can go on now. We're
going to
go next.
So I just sat down there. I said, okay, fine. And really, in 2 weeks, a big wedding was done, and I was married.
Wow.
And 1 month after the wedding, everything seemed nice. I mean, it felt good to be missing somebody, and then I had domestic staff, people calling me, madam, madam, madam. So, you know, something that you weren't expecting in your lifetime
okay.
that was going to ever happen to you. So it was exciting to see all of those kind of things. So I'm like, okay, all right. And then 1 month after the wedding, reality set in. We went out, and I got up to use the bathroom. I came back, and they said I took too long. That why did I stand up, go to the bathroom? I didn't even take permission from him. And in my innocence and naivety, I just said to him, oh, sorry. I didn't know I was supposed to take permission from you. And I actually really meant because, I mean, I haven't been married. I don't know married people have to take permission to go to the bathroom. So I just said, oh, sorry, I didn't know I was supposed to take permission from you. And he thought it was sarcasm. You know, he thought I was being sarcastic, which I wasn't. I didn't even know how to be sarcastic. And he just said, you know what, let's leave. So we left the function. We went home. And I was just opening the door to get into the house. He started beating me right there at the door. And that's how the battery started. That was
barely
a month. Married July 29th, and this was August 20th, you know. It wasn't even quite a month yet. And that is how my episodes of battery started. Before I knew anything, I was pregnant for my firstborn, and he would beat me and throw me down the staircase. I would roll down the steps and hit, you know, fall to the ground floor. He would throw me out. I would slip out of the house and in the grass and the lawn where mosquitoes will bite me. You know, that's how we have mosquitoes that give malaria. We do all sorts, and I'll end up in hospital. I'll be treated. I'll come back home.
Uh-huh.
Just even call him aside and try to advise him. And he'll tell them, just straight out, mind your business. It's my family problem. You don't have to interfere and all that. And this kept going on even while I was pregnant. And towards the last trimester of my pregnancy, the battery was really, really bad. That I remember one day I had to run out of the house, no shoes, no money, and I just started trekking, started walking the streets. And, you know, then there was no cell phone. I'm talking about 1995, 96, no cell phone.
Mm.
And eventually, in Africa at least, maybe the US, yes, but in Africa I hadn't come then. And then I ended up going to one of his cousins, this time's cousin's home. I didn't even know if they were actually like related, because every woman I used to see with him were sister, and eventually was actually sleeping with some of them then. But because I was really young, I didn't know this thing. It was much later I realized that they were not even related in any way. So one of those women, I went to her house, and she, you know, took care of me, took me to the hospital. I was treated, and then
she
had a phone, so she had to take me back home a day later,
And by then, he had gone to my dad's house. My dad was looking for me. Now, by the way, my mom died while I was eight years old, so I didn't have a mom in all of this, you know. I didn't have a mom.
Oh,
was just
so
my dad.
You were very isolated.
So, can I go on?
Did you feel very isolated because you were going through this more or less on your own?
Yes. Yeah, so go on. Yes, you were saying that you're very isolated.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So I came back from that one, and not too long before I had that baby, he beat me so bad that I even thought I was going to lose the child, but eventually I had the baby.
Oh, my gosh.
And the baby was okay. I was fine. And after that, it just keeps going on. And then, you know, the annoying thing is that in Africa, people ask you, what did you do that he will hit you?
Right.
I always said there's no reason.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you about that later. About the attitude. You know, what's the attitude to someone who's on the receiving end?
I was doing. And then you see me walking on eggshells, always living in fear, because I don't know the next thing that will result in beating. I remember when I had the second baby, because I had two boys with him, I had just come back from the hospital, and then when I came home, we had a bottle of water in the fridge. Back then in Africa, bottled water was not a thing. So the main way to have your drinking water was to get water from the tap, boil it, some people filter it, and then put it in bottles or jugs or jars and store them in the fridge for drinking. So bottled water was not a big thing then. It was not very common then. So you had a few bottles of water in the fridge, like Evian water or whatever brand of water you drink in the U.S. I think it's Evian, the most popular brand in the U.S. So you had something like that in the fridge. And I had just come back from the hospital with a brand newborn baby, and I went to the fridge, I took that bottle of water, and I drank. And then when he came to check the water, he found out that one was missing, and he asked, who drank my water? And then somebody mentioned that, oh, I drank the water, and he came and slapped me with the baby in my hand. I was breastfeeding.
Oh, my gosh.
He hit me and hit the baby. I was breastfeeding. And that was just the height for me. I said, no, I'm not going to take this. I took the child, and I walked from his house to my father's house. And when I got to my doctor, I said, I'm not going to continue with this marriage. How would he hit me just because of water? That was my pain. Because in every other case, I used to feel like, okay, maybe I was actually wrong. Maybe it was actually my fault. Maybe it was something I was doing wrong.
Were you blaming yourself?
But with this water situation, with this particular case, I just knew, no, this is just organic behavior. This is in him. There's nothing I can do to change this. That was when the reality started setting in that this is not about you, Mercy. This is about this guy. He can't control himself. And that was when I decided this is enough. So I went to my dad's house, and I was there for like 2 days. My dad took us to the police station, and of course, back then in Africa, and even till now, in some areas, go and report domestic violence, they tell you, oh, go back home, it's a family issue. So that was what happened to me then. They just said, you know what, go back home, it's a family issue. You need to calm down. Maybe your mouth is too sharp. Maybe you're too disrespectful. That's why he's hitting you. So go home and behave yourself.
Right, it's your fault, in other words. It's your fault.
And that was
when people ask you, what did you do? How did you feel?
It's boiling now. I'm trying to contain myself. I'm getting so enraged.
Yeah, yep.
So that was how
Mercy, when people were saying to you, what did you do? How did you feel?
The sexual violence for 11 whole years.
11 years.
Because even at some point, when my dad would get involved, he just finds a way to sweet talk my dad, and my dad will come back and blame me. You know, and he's telling me, you're stubborn, you don't listen, just try and be obedient, be submissive, and everything will be fine, and then he will go back. Isn't sometimes when he sees the injury, like when he really batters me and I have bloodshot eyes, scars on my face, he'll pull out my face, you know, my dad will be mad, he'll be angry. But when my dad comes to confront him and say, why did you do this to my daughter? He'll say, let's go and have a drink. Let's go and talk to like men. Maybe go out, have a drink. And then my dad comes back and then blames me and say, you're okay. I've discussed with your husband. He says, you're the problem. You're not submissive and all that.
Oh, gosh.
That's how
that's
I have to
awful.
Live my life.
Did you know him at all before you got married?
He told me categorically that we don't have any divorcee in our family. So you won't be the first. So you can't leave this marriage. You have to stay there because there's a divorcee in our family history. And you won't be the first. So I had to stay till I turned 30. I was about to, I was 29 actually, just going on 30 because I told myself, I won't stay here. I can't continue like this. I won't live the rest of my life. So I gave myself the 30, like 30 years as my cutoff line. Like, I'm not going to, 30 years old, I won't be 30 years old here in this situation. I just kept telling myself. And when I turned 29 and a few months, I left. And I just decided I was going to
Can you hear me, Mercy?
I also had to wait for the role so that they can survive in my absence because I knew he wouldn't let me take the kids immediately. I needed to get to a level where I would be able to fight, you know, for my kids, and I'll be able to take care of them if I eventually have. So I ensured that I went to university in his home, even though it was a struggle. It was 4 bitter years of trying to get a degree in his house. He did everything under the sun to frustrate me, including coming to my school, the University of Lagos, every time to embarrass me. But I stuck to my guns. I was going to get that degree.
Good.
And
I see you.
And when
you.
I got my first job, I hadn't even earned the first salary. I got the job on the 2nd of October, and on the 19th, before the month ended, before I earned the first pay, I left. And then I started my life all over again. I got my much later, I remarried, got married to my best friend, had 2 more boys. I have 4 boys all together, and I can't be even more grateful to God for seeing me through all of that time, that because I could have died. I mean, I've seen men who die from one slap or one punch, but I had several. I mean, that's why even now I'm still claustrophobic. Like, I can't really stay in a house where there's too many furniture because I'm always really the weapon for my assholes. So when I'm seeing too many verses or too many furniture, if the house is too cramped, I feel very uncomfortable because when he was eating meals back in the day, anything in the house, that's what he's going to use on me. From dining chairs,
everything
to breakfast, anything, that's what he's going to use. So I'm really very, I have this phobia for clustered environments, and it has still not left me. Part of the trauma I'm dealing with, even after several years of exiting that traumatic situation. So I'm grateful to God that today I can say I have peace, I'm happy, and I'm living a fulfilled life.
Wow.
So that's
hooray,
good.
Hooray, well done, well done. So I don't know if you can hear me. Can you hear me, Mercy?
Yes, can you hear her?
I can barely hear her. It's really not clear from her end.
Yeah.
But I heard you very well, though.
Yeah, we might have to find another way to amplify your sound, Jana. But we've got
Okay, so I just wanted to ask a few questions.
Yes.
Like, did you know this man before you married him?
She said she had never met him before.
She never met him before. So did your father know him before he married you off to this guy?
Yes. Did your father know him?
Yeah. So the national airline for our country is called Nigerian Airways. So my dad used to work for Nigerian Airways, and he was a pilot in Nigerian Airways. So I guess my dad knew him. And they both started the relationship the period I was away, because before then I hadn't met him. So it was after I came back, when my dad said, oh, come home, and I came back, and he came to the house, and I realized he was familiar with everyone in the house except me. So it's most likely that while I was away, they had started the friendship, and then he had met everybody.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, we have with us today Dr. Debbie Green, who is joining us as one who counsels those who are in these difficult situations. Want to welcome to our show our Thursday morning host, Dr. Debbie Green with Soul.
Hello. Greetings.
Well, you heard this story. I mean, I'm sitting
welcome,
my blood
Debbie.
Is swelling.
Hello.
And Jana's here live from London on the live line here. You know.
Yeah, welcome, Debbie.
I'm angry. Let me calm down. down. I have a question.
Yeah.
And we've got calls on the line. If you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. We'll be taking a short break, a commercial break in the next 4 minutes. And if you're on our switchboard, press 1. If you have questions for our guests or hosts. But now I have a question that always pops in my mind when I meet somebody who has survived domestic violence and has children. How can you be sexually intimate with someone who is physically abusive? Does one make oneself do it? How do you even get into the mood to do that? Does it feel like love or does it feel like rape? I mean, I'm just, you know, that's just such a conflicting kind of relationship. One, I'm making love to you, and then I'm hitting you. So how does one do that? I mean, I know that's kind of it's a personal question, but I can't wrap my mind around that. So
that's a very brilliant question, actually. And most people don't even get to ask that question because they feel like there's no connection. Well, actually, it is very, very connected because, and I still suffer it now because till date, I still don't enjoy sex because it was introduced to me by someone who was abusive. So
yeah.
You can imagine
it's
very delicate issue. That even when I'm remarried to someone I'm over the moon about, when it comes to that aspect, I'm still very laid back.
Mm.
I'm still very, sometimes it feels like a chore, and he has to work extra hard to get me there.
Mm.
So you can imagine when I was with my abuser, it wasn't fun at all, it wasn't nice. And for me, I would say that was what really triggered my making up my mind to leave. Even when the whole world was against me, family, friends, church, the government, the police, the whole system, the whole society. I didn't have any backing from anywhere. So making up my mind.
That's horrible.
Very difficult. But the sexual aspect of it was what gave me that determination. Because even when he touches me, I'm irritated. I couldn't stand him. And then imagine him coming on me. It was like rape for me. I felt like I was being violated.
Yes, of course.
And at the point I couldn't hold it back, I had to tell him. Because every time he was telling me I'm older and I'm even more sexually active. You are younger and you're not active. What's wrong with you? And I told him one day, I said, sex is not a thing of the body. It's a thing of the mind. And he said, shut up. Have sex with people they don't even know. And you're telling me you know, you're not into it. Go and bring your mind from wherever your mind is. Those are his exact words to me. He said, go and bring your mind from wherever the mind is. Because prostitutes have sex with people they don't even know. What are you telling me? And then imagine it's when he even hits me that he insists on making love to me while I'm in tears, while I'm bleeding, while I have
It's awful.
So I don't even know how, and that's why as much as I work with women, I counsel women, I talk to women about everything, I don't talk to them about sex. Because I know I'm one person that's not qualified to talk about it. Because that's not my department. I'm not even good about it. I'm not good with it. And that's the trauma I have to deal with.
We all have places that we feel more confident and places that we don't feel as confident. Yeah, we all have that.
Very important. The key issue, actually.
Oh, wow.
Mm. So, I mean, I wanted to speak a bit about Butchie Amechita. I don't know if people on the call have heard of her, but she was my tutor at university. And she was Nigerian. She was an Igbo, and she came to live in London. When she came to London, she had 2 children at the time, and then she had another 3 more children with her husband, and he was abusive. She wrote more than 20 books, right? She was a novelist. She wrote more than 20 books, and the first book she wrote, well, first let me say her English was her 5th language, right? So she wrote more than 20 books in English, which was her 5th language. And the first book that she ever wrote, her husband destroyed. He destroyed her book.
Wow.
I mean, physically actually destroyed her book. So I just want to mention that to say that, you know, there's some context to this for me. I know that you're not the only one because there is some context there for me. And I'm wondering, do you think that domestic violence is worse in Nigeria, or do you think it's worse in Britain, or do you think it's about the same?
Yeah. Well, before you answer that question, because I know that can get involved, got to take a break. We're going to think about that. Is there a place where domestic violence is worse because it's culturally supportive?
This is my question, and also to do with the law as well.
Yeah,
because I know that Butchie was told that she was too troublesome. Like, people used to tell her she was too troublesome. That's why she has so many problems. And so this is clearly a cultural thing. But, yeah, I think this is what I was going to ask. Are there cultural norms or laws that make domestic violence more of a problem in somewhere like Nigeria than it is in a Western country like the UK? But, so we're having a break now.
Right. We're going to take a break. I'll run the commercials, Zana, and we'll be right back after this quick break. If you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. If you're on our switchboard now and you have questions for our guest, Mercy Makinde, who is the founder of the Nigerian charity Amazing Amazon Women. And this is an organization that she founded after surviving domestic violence, and it's designed to help other women do the same. So we will
I just
want to
say I put the wrong name. It's not actually Amazing Amazon Women. It's the Amazing Amazon Initiative.
Oh, Initiative. Okay, well, we'll correct that.
My fault. Yeah, Amazing Amazon Initiative was Mercy founded.
Okay, well, let me make those corrections as we go to break, so we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Great.
Are you constantly arguing with your spouse? Are your children misbehaving and acting out? Is someone in your family abusing drugs? Have you been the victim of domestic violence? Are you grieving over the loss of a loved one? Let us help you restore serenity to your life. At Serenity Family Social Services, we understand that good mental health is the result of emotional well-being. Our goal is to assist you and your family in removing emotional distress and restoring harmony and balance to your lives. We offer individual, couples, and family counseling. I'm Howard Williams, CEO of Serenity Family Social Services. Call us today at 312-315-4820. That's 312-315-4820.
Everything you need, what your body needs, is found in nature. So Susan Essentials doesn't do it any other way. Susan Essentials provides your employees and individuals access to over 20,000 nutritional products, and they are shipped direct to your door. Because Susan Essentials is certified in plant-based healing, we're permitted to offer you the best nutritional supplements on the planet. They're non-GMO and sustainably produced, and we take the guesswork out for you. Let Susan Essentials help you take control of your health today.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Mondays at 5 p.m. and Tuesdays at 12 noon on cable TV, Channel 19 in Chicago. And other cities, check your local cable listings.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viata.
Maybe one out of six or seven.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that really tells us we have work to do in raising the next generation of men.
Absolutely.
Our sons
must
be taught differently.
And also bearing in mind that sometimes men are receiving of domestic violence as well. It's usually women. It's overwhelmingly women.
I heard
but
about
there are some men who are on the receiving end as well.
The Nigerian laws, under Section 55 of the Penal Code, it states that the husband is permitted to use physical means to chastise his wife as long as it causes too much grievous harm.
Now that
grievous harm is defined as loss of sight, loss of hearing, disfiguring of the face, or life-threatening injuries. So if it is not any of this, then it is very okay for a man to chastise his wife in Nigeria, according to the Penal Code, Section 55.
And that's in, and what year was that made into law, the code?
No. Yeah, it's just there.
Oh,
but it is applied in both principle and practice.
Mm.
And that is why in most states in Nigeria, you can't take a case of domestic violence to any government arm. Nobody would treat it. Nobody would respond. Mm. Just a few states, maybe in Abuja, Lagos State, and maybe two other states out of 36 states.
Yes. Well, that's, I mean, that's also an understanding that is had in Islam, that a man can chastise his wife as long as he doesn't beat her lightly. And now we have a co-host on my show on Wednesday, Kareem Hamid, who has said that particular verse is wrongly interpreted. It doesn't mean that you can hit your wife. But, of course, if that's already the thought, if that's already the culture, if that's already accepted, then, of course, that's how it's going to be interpreted and that's how it's going to be enacted. So, I've always had issues with that. I'm like, you know, if a man believes that, how can he possibly be a decent husband? If you're believing that me as an adult woman should be beaten if you can't force your will on me, that's not a sign of spiritual growth and ascension in my book. So this is a global thing we have to deal with because a lot of women also believe it. This can't continue unless we teach it to our sons and allow our sons to observe us being beaten. When we do that, we're saying, oh, I should have been more submissive. So this is a whole different way of thinking that we have to change in the women.
So you're saying little boys are growing up in this environment where they're seeing their mothers being beaten and then their mothers are saying to them that it's my fault?
Yes.
It's my fault that I was beaten?
Being beaten. So, I've seen that happen. I have had friends who have been abused by their husbands and they will say, oh, well, I shouldn't have said so-and-so. Oh, it was my fault.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Mentally beat into submission.
I was there. I have been there, so I can relate.
So the thing is, you managed to get out of there. You managed to get out of that situation. And I think that's brilliant because it takes an enormous amount of courage, I think, to do what you did. And then you decide to help others as well.
Yeah, that does take some courage. Donna, I would like to ask Dr. Debbie a question about how you get out of that state of mind.
Yeah,
how
me too.
She helped you get out of that state of mind where they have accepted abuse and taken the blame for it. So, Dr. Debbie, how do you assess this situation when someone has, whether because of culture or tradition or whatever, accepted the idea that they deserved to be beaten and they don't have within them the will to fight back? How do you help in that situation?
Well, one must understand that anytime there is domestic or family violence present, there is a change of thinking. There's a change of feeling. There's a change of sensitivity in that environment, period, which means the human factor is not taken seriously anymore. Life is not taken seriously. The person that's actually the batterer, you know, has what they call a narcissistic mindset. Narcissistic mindset, which means that person has a major, major control issue. It is an actual diagnosis to be narcissistic. They want the control on every level of control. control, and they take pride to a whole nother level. A whole nother level. You're not just prideful. Now, you are straight dominant. There's a dominating factor in there. You are not sensitive to anyone else's needs. You are just only a taker. You're not, again, there's no human factor. There's no sensitivity at all to the pain that you are putting out and also the pain that that person, the body, the battery, is receiving. If you notice, if Miss Mercy, if I can definitely call you Miss Mercy, your name is not Mercy for no reason, but I'm going to go into that in just a moment. But I need to make just a wonderful point. When it came to you as the victim, remember, okay, you were not asked to be into this marriage. You were between two what they call pillars. Your father was there. The man was here. Okay? You were in between two pillars. And when you are in between two pillars, being of a child mindset, well, okay, I'm going to do what my father tells me to do. Child mindset. Even though I don't understand what I'm getting into, but I trust him as my father because my mother, like you said, nature, nurture, innate, was not present. So you didn't get a female point of view on that. You only was in a child point of view, doing what your father expected you to do, not knowing what you were about to go into. You went in totally blind.
So here's the thing, right, Dr. Beverly, I've got a question which is similar to what Naima asked, which is how to get out of that mindset, right? How can someone get out of that mindset?
Hold on one second, because I have to explain this. We're going to go there. Only going to take me less than 5 minutes to say what I have to say. So what I'm saying is fast forward, you and, again, still between the two pillars. You're still listening to Father. Now you're listening to this other person. You see what I'm saying? And you think that, you know, now you what they call a victim mindset, okay? A victim mindset cannot look for escape. They don't see any other. They're in a tunnel. They don't see any, even though pain is there, even though ridicule is there, physical, mental, emotional pain is there, you still didn't look for a way out. And the only reason why you didn't, because there wasn't another factor involved. So here comes the baby, right? Here comes the baby. Now, when you saw that the baby was in danger, it took your mind off of you. You understand? And you had to do something what is called self-rescue. Self-rescue takes you out of the victim mindset and puts you in a mode of self-rescue. Self-rescue. I have to remove myself at all costs. You know, I have to lose my life to get out of this for my children. Because when he hit you, he then, hit the child. At that point, you had to make a very, very quick decision. You didn't have time to sit there and be a victim anymore. Your mind was in your mode. And that's what happens to victims. That's what happens to people when they get to a point when there's another offset of victim mentality option, because that's what it is. It's the offset. Now, even though, Ms. Mercy, some people still stay in the victim mode, even with children. So what's the difference there? It's because they're still caught into that victim mindset. You had an option, and you took the way out. You had an option. You had an option to do something totally different. And that is because of what is happening right now. Because, you know, all the things you went through, it was not in vain. It happened right now. It is for this wonderful move of God that you're doing. So, again, to answer a question, when one shifts out of victim mentality, that means your environment, your feelings, your thoughts are no longer your own. Then no, you don't value those anymore. So which means you don't lean into them or allow them to keep happening. You go into self-rescue mode. That means you get out of is. Some batteries even will kill their predator. They will even kill the batterer because they think they got to take that person off the earth because the fear is so immense. Fear is the only thing that keeps a person in a place. It's fear. So she moved beyond fear. She had to let, even though she was afraid, even though she still felt it, she didn't allow it to control her mind. And see, when
is
you
that how you felt, Marcy, that you were not going to allow your fear to control your mind?
Exactly. You get out of your impulses. The impulse of mind.
Marcy?
And the victim
is that
mind,
how you felt?
And you start logically, rationally, reasonably thinking of a plan to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So now I guess I have a question then for Ms. Mercy. What was that breaking point for you where you just said, that's it, I'm not taking anymore, I don't care what my father says, I don't care if I'm the first one to get divorced, I don't care if I'm bringing shame on the family, I'm leaving. What was the incident that was the breaking point for you?
Well, the breaking point for me was in 3 years before I left, actually. So I had left my soul, my spirit, 3 years before I physically left because I had to make an exit plan. So in that year, I had a surgery. It was a bilateral cyst. The cyst was so big that it couldn't be pulled out. You had to, what they call, like, suction out the fluid. And I filled, like, two little buckets before they could take out the cyst. The doctors kept asking, even the nurses, anyone that comes into my ward, they would ask me, do you have kids? I'm like, two boys. Oh, thank God. So it was clear that I might not have kids or I might not survive or anything could go wrong. Even the doctors were playing in saying, no, you have a 50-50 chance to survive this surgery. That is how bad it was.
Wow.
And thankfully, thanks to God, I had the surgery. I survived. I was okay. I came home. I was still home. You know how if you have a surgery, it's not like you're going to be in hospital until you're properly healed and feet and, you know, all that. I still had my, the stitches on. And I still had the plaster and everything. The surgery points was because it's not like all the laser surgery they have now.
Mm-hmm.
They actually cut me open from my navel to my vagina point. So it was a very big cut.
Wow.
Oh, my
God. I still had the dress on, the stitch and all that. And I said, well, I'll come like a week to take out the stitches and all that. So in the time I was recovering at home, I was just lying down as usual, like every other person who has had a major life-threatening surgery would be recovering.
Yeah.
And he came in and said he's looking for his phone. Then cell phones had come out.
Ah.
And I didn't even have. He was the only one that had a cell phone. He bought this Nokia, the first Nokia camera phone. And he said he was looking for the phone. And I just said, oh, I don't know where it is. And I continued lying down. He said, I'm too lazy to look for his phone. That he's looking for his phone, and I didn't even make any effort to look for the phone. And I'm lying down telling him, I'm too busy to look for the phone. And that's how he started beating me with my surgery, stitches, and with everything we went through. Even him himself went through a lot while I was in hospital. He lost so much weight, so much so that when people come to see us, they'll be like, ah, who is ill? You or your wife? Because you have lost so much weight. You know, it was really traumatic for all of us. And he went through a lot as well. So I was thinking that would be a turning point for us, and maybe the way he was, you know, showering me with attention and all of that, that things would change for us. And that, you know, when somebody has been through like a near-life situation and comes back, you know, how you like kind of pamper the person. So I was expecting that things would be better, like since I didn't die from all of this, that maybe things would be better. But he went ahead and hit me on that day because he was looking for his phone. And the beating was bad. It affected my stitches.
Oh.
And that was the day I said, even if I have to beg on the streets of Lagos, I'm done with this marriage. I said it to myself that day.
Mm.
And I even told him that I don't even love him. I don't have any love for him. And then he kept telling everybody that I said I don't love him. And people come to me and I know you didn't mean it. I'm like, no, I actually mean it. I'm done, you know.
Right.
But of course, I didn't have the resources to leave immediately. So I still stayed back. And did something in my country called the National Youth Service Corps. So something you do after your university,
graduation so that you can get a job. It's a government requirement for every graduate. So I did that 1 year and then started looking for a job until I got the job. And when I got the job, I just, although it wasn't like I just picked up my bag and left, it actually hit me on that day. And, you know, I was actually waiting for an excuse.
Wow.
So after he hit me on that October 19th, he locked me up for 3 days. So I was locked up. Nobody could find me. Nobody could have access to me. And I just got a new job.
Oh, wow.
And I've only just done 2 weeks. And then my office was calling. People were looking for me. You know, so after 3 days, he released me and said, if since you want to go, go. I've been begging for 3 days. And you don't want to give in. You're still angry. You want to go, go. And that's how I picked up my handbag with a flip-flop. And I ran for my dear life.
Oh.
He was the one who kept it.
Wow.
Okay,
we've got three people on the lines. I'm just going to find out who's on the line. One is area code 336.
The breaking point for me was the beating I got after the surgery because of the cell phone.
So I just told myself,
life doesn't mean anything to this man. The cell phone is even more valuable, more important, because I just came off a surgery, I nearly died, and you still have the mind to beat me up because of the cell phone.
Beyond awful. I don't even have words to say how I feel about that. It's beyond awful. But who's on the line? Echo 336, welcome.
Right. You know, that would have been
interesting.
So we have a caller on the line. Anna, you open the mic for Echo 336. I believe we've got Mama AZ on the line, calling from Arizona.
Welcome to the show. Have you got a question you would like to ask Mercy?
I just, I have a comment. This really disturbs me, family.
Of course.
And I thought I had gotten this out of my system. You know, back in the day, I've only had two husbands that were civilians. I just refused to date civilian people or marry civilian people. And it goes back to here in Tucson when I was stopped way back in the day by some African gentlemen, gentlemen. They were in the military stationed here at Davis Mountain Air Force Base. And I lived in Phoenix, family, at the time. And sometimes I would wake up and find somebody out there. When I found out who it was the brothers that I had met at the base were stalking me. And I cried because my friend and my roommate, when I was living in San Diego, she met a sailor. We were stationed at 32nd Street Base, the naval base. And she happened to fall in love with this guy from Africa, and she went, and she happened to be Caucasian. And when she got back, she told me horrific, horrific stories about the abuse of the women over there. And she said, Robbie, you think your people are mean over here to women? You just don't know how bad it is over there. And this was in 1977, family. And I had other issues that I don't even want to get into with African men in the military. But there's a gentleman who works here at this facility. He's African or whatever, a nurse. And it got so bad. When he changed my IV, it was bloody, and he argued and screamed at me. And I called the head nurse. I said, "You get that son of a bitch away from my room, because I am going to." Excuse me. Oh, I didn't mean to say that. I will kill him. And you cannot abuse me. And he would come back and argue with me about the IV. And it just triggered something. And just like this show, I believe, I don't know, that the men there, I only dated military, or, you know, I believe that they are meaner for some reason.
And oh, there is a reason. Definitely a reason. I'm going to talk about that after the break. But I've got two more callers on the line, and I want to make sure they get a chance to speak. So stay on the line, please, because I've got some thoughts about that. Okay. Can I talk to...
Hold on. Donna, we're going to take this break, and then we come back, and 727, if you have a comment, you can make take it after the break, and 779 after the break. We'll be right back. And we'll talk about.
Because I've definitely got some thoughts about this, and it's to do with history. So, yeah, let's go to a break, and then after that, we're going to talk about this some more, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we will be right back after this quick break. So, we want you all to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry. You are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Is Mercy Makinde, who is founder of that a wonderful organization, Amazing Amazon Initiative, to help women escape domestic violence. So before the break,
okay, so who's you got on the line? Area code 727. Welcome to the show. What's your name?
Thank you very much. This is Martha Nyla Abdullah calling from St. Petersburg, Florida, and I'm so happy to have
you. Hey, welcome.
And thank you to Naima, too, and everyone else who's listening. My question is, and I feel so like it's on a level of not even matching up to almost not want to even mention it, because here in America, I guess there's a lot of closet situations where we don't discuss domestic violence, but to be able to measure, I know there have been signs or symptoms given, but where do you draw the line? Is it in an impulsive, erratic behavior that happens ever so often, or is it the first moment that there's a complaint attached to verbal abusive language? I'm trying to, you know, in speaking with young girls and young men, but young girls primarily, of where to break the cord.
Right. So what do we actually define domestic violence as? What's the definition, and how do we tell when it's violent, when it's domestic violence? Do you have any thoughts about that, Mercy?
Okay, so please, can you recap the question, because I didn't hear her clearly.
Well, she kind of was saying, where do you identify that you are being abused? Is it the first time somebody's verbally abusive, maybe calling you names, or is it the first hit? You know, how does a woman understand when your supposed loved one has crossed the line and is disrespecting you, and you are being abused? And I think that's probably a question a whole lot of women need to understand. What is acceptable? What is not acceptable? So what is the thing that labels it as abuse?
Okay, so what I usually tell women, particularly single women, I usually tell them, you don't wait for it to happen to you. If he's hitting
right.
his younger sister, his sibling, he's going to hit you.
Mm.
If he
right.
has road rage, if he's in the car and something happens and he comes down and he's, you know, shouting, yelling, he's going to hit you. So the red flags are always there. But
okay.
sometimes it's
not. Yeah, I think men need to know that too. Men and women both need to know where the line is.
That way, it's an organic behavior. So an abusive person will always abuse someone else. They don't just abuse their wife or their girlfriend or their loved one. You would always see the tendency. They have a short fuse. They're aggressive with their friends.
Okay.
Even if they're watching football and somebody is supporting one team against them, you would see from their reaction. And what if you're already in the relationship and you didn't realize he was abusive? Again, I always say domestic violence is not just physical, it's emotional, it's verbal.
Exactly,
it is,
yes. Yes.
It's social, it's spiritual, it's
yes.
economical or financial. If it deprives you of money from letting you grow financially, doesn't want you to have financial independence, he has abused you. That's domestic violence. If it doesn't allow
okay.
you to associate who you want to associate, and he decides to pick your friends and tell you, I don't want to see you with this person, I don't want to see you with that person, that's domestic violence. It's called social abuse.
Okay.
But
this is what my grandmother used to say, right? There are men that will beat their wives. They're not going to go out on the street and beat up a stranger, but they will come home and beat their wives. You get me?
Hold on a second, John. Let her finish this point.
So you don't have to wait for a punch or for him to use a dining to hit your head before you know that you're being abused.
Okay.
The signs are there, and they manifest in different forms. That octopus, it comes in different forms. So it could be sexual abuse. You don't want to have sex. He wants to have sex, and he's telling you, I don't care if you have any headache or I don't care if you're tired. Come on here, open your legs. That's sexual abuse.
Mm.
That's
right.
rape. That's
right.
Rape, rape right there.
Wow.
So I don't want you to work. I don't want you to have your own money. That's financial abuse right there. And then he's calling you names, because the first punch is not just going to come as a punch. It will start by a yell. It's the next thing will be name calling. You're stupid. You must be crazy.
before that punch comes. So it's one thing, it's step by step before you get the eventual punch or slap. That's how the domestic violence grows. That's how physical attack comes. And some men don't even hit at all, but they abuse you emotionally and reduce you to absolutely nothing.
That is true. But my grandmother used to say there are men who go home and beat their wives. They're not going to go out on the street and hit anybody, but they will beat their wives.
And that's going to affect you mentally and psychologically.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And
that's
even the worst form of abuse, if you ask me.
Psychologically.
So it's not even the slap or the hit that you have to wait for. The moment you start seeing all of these things I've mentioned, you're going through domestic violence.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, Jana, we've got another host joining us here live on Facebook. Let us bring in our sister of the microphone, Zelda Speaks, our Monday morning mindfulness host. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome to the show.
Yes. Thank you so much. And thank you, Martha Nyla, for that question. I think a lot of women are abused and don't know it because...
Yeah, I agree. And we need to know this. We need this knowledge. And men need it as well. They need to know when they are stepping over the line. And they need to stop it.
Well, I guess that brings another question you raised, Jana. Do laws support certain abusive behavior? Like, it sounds like the law in Nigeria supports the idea of a man being able to beat his wife. I know that there are very strict laws against abuse here, but also, now I'll tell you quickly about my experience when I was teaching parenting classes to women who had been jailed in Cook County Jail, and they had lost their children to the Department of Children and Family Services. So their children were somewhere in foster care because they were serving time. They were in, you know, in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I had to do was help them pass a parenting class and get a certificate so that they could get their children back. Well,
right.
In each session, you know, when I would start the sessions, I would ask them, you know, we'd talk and we'd ask them what had happened, the reason why they lost their children. And there was one woman, and she was the cutest little thing, hair done up all nice and everything, and we're having this discussion, and you know, she was saying, well, the courts won't let me see my children, they won't let me talk to them, and, you know, they won't let me communicate with them at all. And I'm getting indignant. I'm saying, well, that's not right. How come they're doing that? How come they won't let you see your children? And she said just calmly, because I killed their father.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm like,
oh, my goodness.
But she said,
is that all you did?
I'm tired of him beating me. And I was I'm thinking, okay, so why are you in jail?
Yeah.
And he's,
yeah.
And then you see your children, but what else were you supposed to do to make him stop? So that's my question. I guess, do our laws really support women who have to fight back? Or want him to stop, you know, they know it's going to be either my life or his.
That's right. And there is that law, Stand Your Ground, in the States. But do you remember the story a couple of years ago about the woman who shot her ceiling? She pointed her gun at the ceiling, and she shot the ceiling, and she ended up getting put in prison for shooting the ceiling. Remember that?
I remember that, yes. And I was upset then. So I think we have to make some major changes
in the way we
raise our sons so that they have human compassion. That's what seems to be missing. Well, I think
and
Dr.
they know
Debbie,
how to express themselves, right? If you're upset about something, you need to learn how to express it. And a lot of times we tell male children not to express their feelings. Keep it to yourself. Just push it down so you can't feel it anymore, which is kind of the opposite, really, of what they need to be doing. But that is what we do to male children.
I think that does have a lot to do with how we raise our children. So would you say that, and I'm not asking this to Miss Mercy because, of course, you know, experiencing Nigerian culture, would you say that the men are not allowed to express emotions in a healthy way. The only emotion they're allowed to express is anger. Is that what you've observed?
Yeah, because you know the saying that, oh, you need to be a man. You need to bust
up. Yeah,
exactly.
You need to man up.
In Africa, so men are not allowed to express emotion. Men are not, you're not supposed to be having a conversation to say nicely, oh, babe, I don't like that thing you did. Oh, I don't like that. You're supposed to be bossy about it. And this attitude is not even just in husband-wife relationships, even in offices, but workplace. You're supposed to talk down on your staff. They should tremble when they see you walking like through the door, like, yes, the boss is here. So that's the culture that we have back in Africa, and I don't know if any other part of the world, I mean, experiences this kind of thing. So, and like I said before, we live in a very, very patriarchal society in Africa. The man is just to go out there, work hard, bring the money, and then the woman
right.
is supposed to be home, tell the children
right.
and all that. It takes a lot. It's beginning to happen. I mean, with the advent of social media and the internet, and there's a lot of awareness, so men are beginning to do better. So yes, we have the responsibility of raising our sons better, raising them right,
yes.
so that they don't turn up the older
yes.
generation. But for me, I also feel that, and that's why my NGO, my charity is focused on women. I feel that even our daughters, we also need to raise them right, and we should
mm-hmm.
do to our daughters now what our parents did to us back then. When I say our parents, I mean generally, not just
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
So, for example, we have this thing about when I need to get married, you have to pressure the girl. Oh, you're 20 now. You should be looking for a husband. You're 25. Where's the husband? You're 30. Oh, my God, you're not married. And then, at the end of the day, they just settle for anybody just to be a Mrs. Somebody. And what happens? They get into the relationship. They're suffering abuse of any form that I've just mentioned. And they just believe that, it's better for me to stay, Mrs. Somebody, I need to be married, than to walk out
yeah.
of
yeah.
Relationship. And in most cases, they're taken out in a body bag because
wow.
they want to stay married. I just have to be married. And that's
yeah.
because of the way they have been conditioned. And I actually feel that most of us are guilty because you have a friend who is 35 and like, babe, how far? No guy yet. What's going on? That's social pressure.
Yes.
You're
yes.
pressuring yourself
yes.
properly because you're married. You expect her to be married, and then she doesn't find somebody. The next guy that says hello, she's going to the altar.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's the pressure stuff. We are
absolutely.
All guilty or the other.
Okay,
yes.
I'm just very concerned.
We were raising our daughter. Oh, you need to be so that you can get a good husband. That's all we tell our daughters. You need to know how to cook so that you can get a good husband. So they condition them to believe that marriage is the ultimate goal for being a girl child.
Oh,
your education
yeah.
doesn't matter. And that's why all of us spend so much money on our children's wedding day, more than on our children's graduation day.
Ooh.
See people will close the street because their daughters are getting married. We will invite all our friends. How many people do you invite to their graduation?
Wow.
How many graduation do you celebrate? Graduation from primary to secondary? Do you carry, is it as weighty as the way you carry your engagement and your wedding
wow.
and your marriages? These are the issues. We groom the girl child to believe that
mm-hmm.
everything you do, I don't care the degree you have, the most important thing, your destination in life is that man's house.
Wow.
And
yeah,
that's
I get
why
it. I get it. I definitely get it.
Abuse.
I'm just very aware that we've got another caller on the line, so we find out who's calling.
A baby doll, a Barbie doll. We buy the
trucks and everything.
Technical stuff, the
yes.
truck, the airplane for the boy.
Yes.
Because we feel he's macho. We should be able to do this. You have a girl in the house. Oh, come and join me in the kitchen. You have the son. Oh, he's watching cartoon, and that's fine.
Mm.
This is where it all starts.
Wow.
And the way we live.
Yes, that conditioning.
You have to, you're not good for anything else. You're just going to be in the kitchen. We're going to nurture us in this house. And when you finish here, you're going to nurture your husband and your children. And we grew up thinking that that's where we're headed. Until
mm-hmm.
we change the narrative. Until we begin to raise our kids differently and let them know that they are valuable on their own.
Yes.
You can be a doctor, engineer, whatever. A hairstylist, a caterer, a baker. You can be anything. And you're fulfilled. Without being a Mrs. Somebody. And if you have someone to be a Mrs. Somebody, oh, well and good, fantastic, beautiful. But we let our daughters understand that this pressure to stay married would eventually evaporate. So when they find themselves in an abusive relationship, they can boldly and courageously take a walk.
Mm.
It's because the men know that these women will not leave. I've counseled different families, spoken to different husbands, and they will tell me to my face that no matter what they say, my wife cannot leave me. Because if she leaves me, that's the end of her life. This is a woman suffering abuse.
Wow.
But the husband will confidently tell you, my wife is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
She can't leave me because her life will end without me.
Wow.
And that's what my ethics will tell me too, that you can't survive without me. And I told him something. I told him, you will read about me in the papers.
Wow. Well, all right. And
that's
now
the
she
best,
is.
That's the best revenge, isn't it? The
Global
best revenge
radio.
Is living your life well.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so we've got one more caller on the line. Let's just see who's on the line. Right, all of a sudden my keyboard starts playing up. Here we go. Okay, caller from 309. No, sorry, caller from 727.
I think that was, we just had, that was Martha Nyla. We just heard from her.
Oh, that was Martha. Okay. Thank you for that call, Martha. So can you tell me, were there obstacles in you setting up your charity blessing? I mean, not blessing. Sorry, Mercy. My mind is somewhere else today. Mercy, did you have any problems or challenges in setting up your charity?
Okay, so,
as you would expect. Oh, I was already labeled. Oh, she's a divorcee. Oh, she left her husband. Oh, she's this and she's that. So she wants other women to be like her. She's trying to gather a group of divorcees. So the stigmatization and victimization was the obstacle.
Was it coming from men or women or
both?
Wow.
And the smart fact that it's even more from women, actually.
Wow.
And that's why I always say that sometimes the things that women suffer, the women themselves, bring it harder on fellow women.
Yeah.
Domestic violence. The women that will stigmatize you, your divorce, it doesn't stop your male friends from being your friends.
Mm.
But your female friends will be the ones to stop talking to you because you're divorced.
Wow.
So that you don't come and take their own husband. That's really the case. Yeah, like, oh yeah. So now she's divorced. I don't want her around me so that she doesn't come and take my own husband. You would find that with a lot of women. And then it's the women that would gossip. They're the ones that would talk about it. Why did it happen? Maybe she did this. Maybe. So they're the ones that will always talk about it. So I kind of believe that really most of the stigmatization comes from women most of the time. And then another problem we had, apart from stigmatization, women weren't opening up because they're hush-hush about this thing. They couldn't find their voices. And that's why I would jump on a show like this anytime, any day, not just for publicity, but because there's a woman out there who would hear me today, and she would say to herself, if Mercy can cross that line of freedom and share her story unashamedly, I can do the same.
Yeah.
So me sharing my story gives some people the courage and the mind to, like, okay, if Mercy can share it, I can share it too. So me coming up open to the world and sharing my story every day helps a lot of women also open up to share their story so that people can begin to see that this is really a problem. It didn't just happen to Mercy, and Mercy was not unlucky, or she's not a child of the devil, and that's why it happened to her. These are real, because, I mean, those are some of the things that people will say when you, well, maybe her bad life that she lived as a youth is coming after her now. It's karma. That's why she's having, you would hear, and you'll be thinking, are these guys in their right senses? So me sharing my story also helps a lot of women come out to share their stories. That's how I was able to break that obstacle. Another obstacle is that these women, because they're not financially empowered, most times when they leave the marriages, they don't have home, like a shelter, they don't have food, they can't take care of their children. And I was doing this thing, funding, well, I mean, with my personal funding, I didn't get funding from any organization till date. I've not had any funding from any organization. So that was really challenging as well, you know, helping these women, you know, I mean, catering to their needs. And that's why my NGO, rather than only talking to them and preferring psychosocial assistance, we focus on empowering them. So I don't give them fish. I teach them how to fish. And that's how the entrepreneurship angle of my work came in. So I started teaching these women how to do certain things to help them raise funds, particularly skills for free. I teach them skills, how to make hair, like braids like this, how to make handbags, shoes, soap, bake, cook.
said, they can start their own small businesses so they can make money. So that's majorly the work I do, teaching women how to be financially
independent. Tell me a bit more about your entrepreneur.
And if I had my money, I'm not sure I would have stayed 11 years.
Wow.
I stayed 11
really?
Years
wow.
because I didn't know where I was going. I didn't have any money. My dad had said, you can't come back to my house. So where will I go from there? So I had to stay until I'm able to make money before I could leave. And I know that
right.
once some of those women start to make money, they won't even think twice before they leave. And that's why I focus on empowering them financially by teaching them trade skills and helping them set up businesses.
Mm. Well, I'm thinking that we're going to find a way that the Female Solution can be a regular supporter of your organization. Because
Wonderful. This
we have to make a statement that we're changing the way we relate to each other as women.
Right.
We have to stop stigmatizing each other. Like you said, stop pressuring girls to feel like they got to get married and then they get masters and degrees and everything. And we're saying, oh, yeah, but that doesn't matter. But are you married yet? And I've a lot of young women have said that they're going through that with their families right now.
I mean,
they've achievements. But they don't have a husband, and they're being made to feel like they're a failure in life because they're still single and they're in their 30s, you know. So we have to.
We've had situations where we have young girls hire a man to go with them for Thanksgiving, or they hire a man to go with them for Christmas, just because everybody will be there and asking them, where's your boyfriend, where's your fiancé? So women go out of their way to hire men to go for Thanksgiving and Christmas. It shouldn't be.
That
kind of girl will jump into any marriage and will stay put. So she's taking that in the body bag just because of pressure from family.
Mm.
Well, I agree with you. It shouldn't happen, but I think it's a very creative solution to get your family off your back for a little while, isn't it?
Well, you know what has to happen?
We have to do that, but that is a very creative solution, isn't it?
I mean, you know, that does shut people up, but what are you saying to yourself?
Yeah, I am not
strong enough to stand on my own and be respected for the choice that I have made to be single until I find someone who
is right.
If I don't, that's okay too. I'm still successful even if I never marry. That has to be something we decide on the inside. Marriage does not make me a successful woman. If I find that soulmate, that life partner, that's good. If I don't in this lifetime, still good. We have to change that cultural behavior.
We need to change the script. We need to change the narrative.
Yes. I think
that is
important.
Speaking of narrative, the person that asked a little while ago, are men in Africa meaner? I was at this really, really interesting presentation, I think it was last week, and it was the leopard, following the leopard. Let me just see. I want to get it exactly right. But this lady has written a book about what happened in Kenya, because what the British did to people, the way they tortured people during what they call the Mau Mau uprising. And she started out by saying her father was very, very violent. Her father was very, very violent to her mother. And she was saying that, you know, because of the trauma that people went through under colonization, because the thing is, a lot of this stuff, we don't even know. We don't even know what really happened. And the people in Kenya, I found out a few years ago, they signed a treaty, right? The Kenyans actually signed a treaty saying they would not teach the history. Right? The British made them, when the British finally withdrew, they made them sign a treaty saying we will not teach the history. So obviously, there's a lot of people who've been growing up in Kenya over the past, 50 years, something like that, since the British left. There's a lot of people who grew up not even knowing what happened. You know, there's people who've grown up in Kenya who have no idea about what happened and what the British actually did to people. And, you know, she was saying, you know, she didn't understand why her father was so violent until she started finding out what the British had done to people. And, I mean, some of the things she was describing were just horrific, and I can't even talk about them. So some of them are just too unbelievably horrendous to even talk about. But, you know, the thing is, if there is a problem with violence in a particular community, you know, there's reasons for that. It's not like that people are just so violent by nature. I mean, I think we all know that probably on this call. I don't think anybody thinks that black people are just violent by nature, or African people are just violent by nature. But there are actually historical reasons why certain behaviors, which are very, very toxic behaviors, have become in some ways the norm. Because if you go through terrible, terrible trauma and you never get any healing for that, then, you know, what's going to be the outcome of that? And that, you know, just like in the States and in Britain, we talk about post-traumatic slave syndrome. The same thing happened in Africa to a certain extent, that people went through this horrendous trauma and they never had an opportunity for healing. And as a result of that, there are these toxic behaviors sometimes. Do you have any thoughts about that? Mercy, do you agree? Do you disagree? What are your thoughts?
Well, Jana, we got to take another. We got to take our last break, and when we come back,
okay.
I think we can take a look at is are we still dealing with post traumatic slave syndrome? But Asian women and European women are also Asian women and European women are also facing domestic violence, like the statistics that Mercy gave earlier. I mean, was it one out of every four women or one out of every three women globally? So
50%.
Right.
So, but we'll talk about that.
And some of the stories I hear about Asian people and, you know, the violence they inflict on their children, it's just beyond shocking, really. And I always thought that black people were the worst, and a lot of that is to do with slavery, those toxic patterns that we've learned. But, you know, sometimes Asian people as well can be terribly, terribly cruel to their own children. And I believe if you grow up experiencing that and seeing that and witnessing that, it affects you. It affects what you think is normal. If you grow up in a household where there's a lot of violence, you grow up thinking that that is normal. And that's why I keep saying it's not just women who need this information. Right,
right. Right.
Men and boys also need this information. Anyway, yeah, let's go to a break.
So we'll be right back after this quick break. There was somebody. Yeah, we'll be right back after
that.
Something on somebody's phone or something. But anyway, we'll be right back after this last break. So stay with us.
What happens when a group of people are kidnapped from their homes, smuggled away in chains, and held captive in a foreign land where they are tortured, raped, and forced to perform hard labor by the lash of a whip and under the constant threat of death? Slavery, the African-American psychic trauma. What happened to the doctors, writers, scientists, builders, educators, and spiritual leaders from Africa's golden age? Who did they really capture and sell into slavery? Are all African-Americans suffering from psychic trauma because of a conspiracy to hide their true identities? Do you have psychic trauma? Take the test on page 22 of the book and see. Order it online today at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. And get your personally autographed copy of the book, Slavery, the African American Psychic Trauma. The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Viata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D.
Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment, 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
What if you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant? Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of our cells, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about cell care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
About post-traumatic slave syndrome. That's what your book is about, how to recover from post-traumatic slave syndrome. Is that right, Naima? Do you agree with me?
Yes, absolutely. Well, then, you know, in the book, Slavery, the African-American Psychic Trauma, we do talk about how our relationships are affected by coming out of being emotionally abused and physically abused. We talk about how our child rearing is affected by that, the extreme violence with which we raise our children.
Yes. And see, the thing is, I always think that it's because of slavery, and I still think that now, it's because of slavery, we have inherited these toxic ways of relating to each other in romantic relationships, in family relationships between parents and children, and it will never stop until we heal it. We have to heal it. We're carrying this stuff from generations now. So we have to heal it. But you see, what I didn't realize until I saw this presentation the other day, I haven't got my head around this yet, but how much that's still going on now in Africa for the same reason, right? It's everything to do with child rearing and the way that our parents and our ancestors had to do child care in order to stop us from being killed. Because, you know, the parent would beat the whatsit out of the child in order to protect the child, knowing that if a white person saw that child behaving that way, that it would be much, much worse for the child.
Right.
So these are toxic patterns that we learn for survival.
The sound coming through that's kind of distracting. Is there some almost like, you know, crumbling sound or something? I'm not sure. Is there? And Mercy, your light is, I don't know, you need a little more light on your, you need to turn some light on your face.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We can see your beautiful face.
Okay, just one second. I need to back up to turn the light. Is that okay?
That's fine, yes.
Okay.
So do you have thoughts about that at all, Mercy? Have
evening
you seen
where they
this
are.
Helping yourself?
Well, the sun, yeah. I had to remember. They're 6 hours ahead. So whereas Dr. Debbie has light coming in her window.
In London, yeah.
You all are near sunset. It's almost 8 o'clock there, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
it's about 20 to 8.
But, you know, you've made a good point. Now, I have a question, and it's something that comes up often as I speak to people who are from various African nations.
Mm-hmm.
There had to have been a level of cruelty between us already happening.
Yeah, I believe that.
Which is how we ended up being prisoners of war, being sold to Europeans and other people. But
that's
the fact
true.
Is there was already a system of degrading certain family groups. Matter of fact, I had a friend from Nigeria, you know, was kind of explaining, okay, well, the weaker tribes gotten enslaved by the stronger tribes. So there was already kind of a meanness going on between us anyway.
No, you see, I believe that that is part of our nature as humans, and it's a part of our nature as humans that we have to overcome. You know, we're always talking about how can we live in a peaceful world. We talk about that pretty much every month, but how can we create a peaceful world, rather? And, you know, what the Buddha taught was that we have these negative, destructive instincts inside of us, but we can overcome them. It takes a lot of work and effort, but it's possible to do it, and many, many people have done it. So it's not impossible, but yeah, I believe there's probably cruelty in every society to a certain extent. But what was really interesting, let me just drop the name of this book. It's called Through the Leopard's Gaze. Through the Leopard's Gaze. And the author was talking about what she learned. And some of the cruelty that she described that was inflicted on people in Kenya, and remembering that it wasn't just Kenya, right? But some of the cruelty that she described is just beyond belief. It's just beyond shocking. It really is. And this is what was done to people by the Europeans, by the British, when they were in Africa. And they didn't just do it in Kenya, but we tend to have this information specifically to do with Kenya. And for many, many years, the Crown said, no, you can't sue us. You can't sue the Crown because you have no evidence. And then a few years ago, this evidence turned up. Somebody just decided to come clean, because the British actually documented everything the same way that the Nazis did. They documented everything, right? All the names, all the places, all the dates, right? Where they held people, where they tortured people, what they did to them. They documented it all, but it somehow disappeared. But some turned up a few years ago. So now the Kenyans have just sued the Crown, and from what I'm told, they won. I believe they won their case because these people committed incredible atrocities against African people, and it went on for many, many years. I think largely because they are afraid of African people. They were afraid that African people were going to rebel, and when African people did finally rebel, they had to do everything to try to ensure that it wouldn't happen again. So it was just unbelievable cruelty sometimes. I'm not going to talk about it too much, but if you want to know more, if you go into London Black History Walks, if it's not on there now, it will be on there within the next couple of days probably. It's called Through the Leopard's Gaze, and the whole thing was taped. The whole thing was recorded. So, you know, you might want to have a look at that, and, you know, you're definitely going to learn something. It's not a nice thing, but it is our history, and I believe that knowledge is power. That's my personal belief. Knowledge is power. So although it is horrendously disturbing what they did to people, I think we need to know that. Anytime someone's trying to suppress knowledge and prevent it from getting out, that's when I start taking an interest. That's when I start becoming curious. You get me?
Absolutely. Well, Jonna, I got a quick point, and then I know Dr. Debbie's got to leave us in a moment, and she maybe want to make a last statement. But without all the things that we went through with Europeans, they were doing that to each other before they even got involved with Africans. They were
They
were beating, flogging. So they just basically they found another scapegoat outside themselves, but they were.
That's right. That's right. And if you read Franz Fanon, Wretched of the Earth, he talks about the fact that to Europeans, we represent the shadow self. So everything that they dislike about themselves and fear about themselves, they have projected onto us. And of course, you know, the Arabs were doing that for centuries probably before the Europeans even came.
So now I have a thought to throw out there, because it seems like there's something inside people that makes them want to abuse somebody who seems weaker, which seems to be where this abuse of women comes from. We get to be targeted because we are physically weaker, and then you have all these cultures that support the idea of women being beaten, oppressed, suppressed, owned, controlled.
That's right.
And their children.
They brutalize their children. So anybody who's smaller than you and weaker than you, it's okay to beat them. That's kind of the long and the short of it, really, isn't it? Do you have any thoughts about this, Mercy? I'm not trying to shut you out of the conversation. Mercy, can you hear me?
Yes. And then, Dr. Debbie, maybe you can, before you go, because she's got to leave in a moment, maybe you have a thought on how do we unlearn the philosophy of bullying, because that's what it actually is, that you should be able to be mean to someone who cannot fight back. How do we teach a different standard of human treatment so that we don't keep reproducing this patriarchal cruelty toward women that has been manifested globally to females? How do we change it?
Well, Marcia said it earlier, you know, this is not just, a society or a nation or a global thing. This is spiritual, okay? We're dealing with generational curses. This was happening, you know, before the slavery times. This was happening, you know, during the first bloodshed on the land, just because it was between, you know, if you understand the biblical context, it was between two men. But if you remember in the book of Judges, if I can kind of go back to this, and I don't want to separate and not answer your question, but I have to say this. In the book of Judges, if you read that book, there is a domestic violence era in the books of Judges where this woman was dismembered and beaten and sent out throughout the land to make a point, you know what I'm saying, from her captor. But that was like one of many. But what I'm trying to say is this is generational curses, y'all. Y'all know there's a spiritual condemnation to this. You know what I'm saying? It is something way beyond our human understanding because it's in the invisible. So that being said, how do we come out of it? Well, first of all, we got to first acknowledge that it's being done. You know what I'm saying? How can you rescue somebody from something that they don't want to be rescued from? You got to
think about
education. It's educating them as young as 5 years old what it means for a person to treat you with respect. You know what I'm saying? How early in the game, so that person will grow up only allowing themselves to be treated with dignity and respect. And when that happens, this thing called self-love then is established. Self-discipline, self-boundaries, self-limits to people doing whatever they want to do to that individual. You see what I'm saying? So when that is not something that's done, because we don't do that in society.
Right.
We don't teach that. We barely teach that at home. You know, we don't tell little Julie, okay, at 5 years old, don't let, you know, just make sure you respect yourself. Don't let anyone talk to you any type of way. Don't let anyone touch you. I mean, we would tell them the predator touch, which means don't go to strangers. Don't go to strangers. Don't let people touch your body. But then you said nothing about the mind. You're not teaching them how to cover their mind.
That's right.
You got to cover their mind, you got to teach them how to cover their heart and their spirit early in the game. We don't teach this in school. It's not taught in the churches. It's not taught at home. So guess what? The generational curses live on. And it goes from one bloodline to another bloodline. It gets worse because it gets stronger. See what I'm saying?
Okay, but what I would still want to know is what you think about, because, I mean, I think you raised some very, very important points, Doctor. I want to know what you think about all this, Mercy. Have you got thoughts about this at all?
I didn't hear.
What does she think about this? What does she think about?
Yeah, do you have any thoughts about this intergenerational, multi-generational problem which we've just been speaking about and the effect it has on Africans? Because this lady who's written Through the Leopard's Gaze, she was talking about being ashamed to be African. Because she was brought up to believe that Europeans were so amazing and Europeans were so wonderful. And when she found out the truth, it was a big shock because her whole life she'd been brainwashed to believe that Europeans were superior. Now, again, I think this is something that we go through all the time in the diaspora. I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk about this before from the point of view of someone in Africa. So I'm just wondering, have you thought about it? Have you got any thoughts about this, Mercy? Because you're the expert here, okay? Let's be very clear. You are the expert here. So have you got any thoughts about that?
Yes, yes, yes. I was going to say that, unfortunately, women are groomed to be rehabilitation center for badly raised men.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a men's world. Men will always be men. Men will always be men.
Yeah.
And they let that sink into your marrow.
Like a can't
right, right.
To your marrow, it can't come out. If it's on your skin, you can wash it off. But when it sits into your marrow, it stays there. And that's how we grow up to accept the man, no matter how
right.
he is.
Right.
Do you see a connection between that
and what happened historically, under colonialism? See a connection
Africa,
there.
The man is even messing around, he's cheating, for example. And you report to family, church, whoever, they'll ask you, does he come home? And you say, yes. Does he give you money for your kids? Yes. Does he eat your food? Yes. What else do you want?
Exactly. You're supposed to be grateful, right?
That's the narrative.
Mm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
why, for me, when I say my charity for women, it's not just until you're 25. I take my work to primary schools, and we start to teach them. Like Dr. Debbie said,
right.
We catch them young.
Right.
We begin to teach them from when they're little, and you don't just have to accept anything. You're strong.
Good.
We teach them all those affirmations.
Good.
You're beautiful.
Yes.
You're powerful.
Yes.
You can rule the world. You're everything.
Yes.
And we also speak to moms. We speak to parents. Don't let the children believe that marriage is the ultimate goal, and whatever you achieve in life doesn't count.
Right.
Until where is the husband? So we're trying to change this narrative because, truthfully, women in Africa, we have become the rehabilitation center for badly raised men. We're supposed to just
Well, not just in Africa.
Not where they come.
Trust me. It's not just in Africa. But tell me something. So what happens when you tell that to the parents? How do they respond?
Oh, everybody listens. They tell you, oh, good job. Oh, well done. Oh, but they go back home and sometimes they begin to just carry on their normal way because that's what you're used to. So it's
mm-hmm.
one voice you're just like a lone voice in the wilderness. I'm telling them these things I'm sharing here. And then today is Saturday, right? Sunday they go to church. And then the pastor opens 1 Corinthians 11:3. The man is the head of the family. The man is supposed to be submissive to the man.
Yeah.
You're supposed to, who are they listening to? Are they going to listen to a Mercy that is supposed to be some time in her life a divorcee? Fortunately, they're married again.
Mm.
Or they're going to listen to the holy man who hears directly from heaven. Get what I mean? So religion has also done a lot of damage.
Bondage.
Yes.
Religion and the culture. And then some of these people... They know what it is. They know that you're actually saying the truth. When I speak to them, they acknowledge that what you're saying is the right thing, Mercy, you're telling us the truth. But they go home and they act out what society expects of them.
Right.
What culture demands of them. What religion
and the question I had was, do you see a connection between that and what happened under colonization?
Who is dragging them more? Who is pulling? Who is getting the most pull? Is it family? Is it religion? Is it culture? They would eventually succumb to that pull, regardless of what you're telling them.
You know what I would say, Jana?
Yeah.
We have to create a higher standard of human behavior.
I agree.
That everybody needs to strive to meet this standard of respect for all life. And what does that respect look like? And it has to be across gender lines, across racial lines, across culture lines. This is what it means to be a human being. And this is what we must teach both male and female children, how to treat other human beings. And no one is any lesser value of anyone else. We must teach this. And that is the direct revelation from the Creator will always reinforce love for all, unconditional respect.
respect for yes. all, not, well, you know, this person is female or this person is black or this, you know, all are of one source.
Yeah.
We are all
human
children of God.
Human excellence
must
excellence.
Be the goal for all
yeah.
human beings. And
yeah.
To be excellent means to treat each other as you would wish to
yeah.
be treated. I mean, we've been given a goal
and I think
follow them.
Yeah, I don't mean to cut you, but I just want to add something there quickly before I forget. It even boils down to the religion itself. It's just unfortunate
mm-hmm.
that the modern pastors, or I don't know, maybe the Orthodox pastors, I don't know which one is even more guilty, have decided to take one part of the scripture and use it to oppress the women.
Yes.
In actual
yes.
sense,
yes.
when you look
yes.
at the Bible holistically, the Bible lets us know that God treasures women. For the first
mm-hmm.
time in the Bible where the word helper was used, it was used to refer to a woman, telling the woman you're God's, a man's helper. So if the man was whole and complete and such a superman, he would not need a helper. But when God created the woman, he said, his helper. And the word used in the Bible to describe helper, the actual Hebrew word, is the same word the Bible used to describe the Holy Spirit. When
right.
he said, I will send you a helper. So the woman and the helper, and the woman and the Holy Spirit are operating on the same point of view.
Mm.
But you see, we are looking at the human from a human and a logical point of view, and we think that he has more muscles and more biceps, so he is superior. If we want to even look at it from a scriptural point of view, from God's own point of view, after God made man, the Bible tells us he looked at him and said, ah, this guy cannot go on all by himself. I need to make him a woman. The woman was created from his bone. He was created from mad dust. Who is the superior version? If we even want to go by that. So the woman is like a woman or a machinery that has a 100,000, what do you call it, maybe megawatts.
Mm-hmm.
So we bring ourselves down and start operating as if we can only power something that is 10 megawatts.
Right.
Meanwhile,
right.
God has given us the capacity. We don't even understand our own capacity and capability.
Correct.
It even
right.
starts with us. We are the problem. Because if
Ooh.
We understand our place in God, we would not do some of these things that we do. It is the women, like I said before, that even oppress
right.
women the more in Africa. They're the
Ooh.
Ones that carry out all the widow rights. They're the ones that would gossip about you when you have any relationship issues. They are the ones, even now on the blog, you know,
no.
talking about people whose homes are broken, who is doing this, who is doing that. You know, it's the women creating
yeah.
the harm. And that's because you
and
don't recognize
and it's not just in Africa.
Because of her prowess in bed or her skills in the kitchen.
Mm.
No woman in history. But yes, we look at ourselves that is where we're supposed to show our expertise.
Mm.
No, God has blessed us beyond those two departments. And we need to begin to recognize our power so that we can teach that to our children.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
How do we even teach it?
There you go. Well, we got a minute before we have to go. Mercy, please tell us, how do we get in touch with you? Give us your website information, your contact information. How do we get involved if we want to contribute to the
Amazon Initiative?
Yes.
Okay, so on Instagram, it's my name. Mercy Makinde, and my user ID is Mercy the Amazon, at Mercy the Amazon. On Facebook, still my full name, Mercy Makinde. You find me on Facebook. And the website for the charity is www.theamazingamazon.org. I can type it in at www.theamazingamazon.org. So you can see our work there. If you go to our Instagram page, you would also see little things I've been able to do within my capacity as an individual. Amazing Amazon Initiative. That's on Instagram.
So and the website is theamazingamazon.org?
Yeah, that's the Instagram. And we're happy to receive any support from anywhere, from anyone who, like, Zelda said, oh, she's happy to support the women out there suffering. And like I said, I don't give them fish. I don't just give them money. I teach them how to fish so that they can stand on their own eventually. On Facebook, I'm Mercy Makinde. So there's so much to be done to help these women to stand on their feet. And we welcome any support, any kind of support. If it's counseling, if it's cash to help with the work, whatever. Donations, clothes, whatever, food, anything you can help with. Because they always have children suffering alongside them.
Okay. Okay. Well, Mercy, thank you so much for your contribution today. Thank you so much for appearing on my show. And we will be in touch.
But you can hear every show in the archive at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com.
Happy women. Yes, we would.
We'd be a bunch of fat, happy women.
I love it. We love men, but we love ourselves more, and we're learning to love ourselves more by not making domestic violent relationships.
Yeah, absolutely.
We must learn to love ourselves. Well, thank you all so much. Thank you, Jana. We appreciate it. Every first Saturday, live from London, Jana brings us some fantastic news, and thank you so much.
And thank you so much for helping me out and for being a mercy.
All of you.
Brilliant show.
Where are you in Nigeria?
Can
you share that? Where's what?
What city in Nigeria?
Lagos. 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 Okay, is that the capital, right?
Yes.
That's
the commercial capital.
Commercial.
So just like New York is to U.S.
Okay.
The commercial capital, but we have Abuja. Which is your Washington, yeah.
Oh, okay. And what's your name on Instagram again?
Mercy. Sorry, I didn't put that. But Mercy the Amazon.
Mercy the Amazon is on Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay. Mercy. Is that all one word?
Yes, that's the user ID. Mercy the Amazon.
Okay.
No underscores, no dash, no dot.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, we will definitely be in touch with you, my sister. Oh, I found it.
All right.
Cindy, women's coach, yes?
Yes.
All right, my sister.
All right.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows. Listen to our radio shows. Order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Xiexie. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, Gracias. Italy, Grazie. Egypt, Shukran. Ghana, Medasi. Nigeria, Eshe. South Africa, Ngiyabonga. Senegal, Geret. Kenya, Asante. Israel, Toda. Pakistan, Shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.